Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What's up, fellow addicts? This is Shannon, the producer of The SDR Show. On today's episode, joining host Ralph Sutton and guest co-host James Mattern, it is Patrick Stone and Sam Colton of the band Butterside. Really fun episode. We hear embarrassing stories, horrifying stories, and the whole origin story of how the band Butterside came to be. It's a really fun episode. Make sure you watch all the way to the end. Remember, we do the show live every single Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigital.com/live. The only way to watch that is to use promo code, if you're not currently a subscriber, to use promo code SDR14 for a special spring promotion where you will get a 14-day free trial that will give you access to the full SDR unedited episodes and sooner than you can get them everywhere else, as well as episodes of every other show on the Gas Digital Network, all for free for 14 days. So if you've been wanting to try it, now is the time. Here it is right now, the Butterside episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me the tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's
it is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. You know it's going to be a good show when James Mattern is back in his kitchen.
Back in the goddamn kitchen, baby. We're cooking breakfast for the guests, and we're going to send it to them wherever, L.A., whatever the hell they're at. We're going to make it happen, baby.
Your camera's moving ever so slowly. How is that happening? Is there an earthquake in your house? A very mild one?
I am former professional wrestler Earthquake. It's me the whole time.
That's kind of weird. I like it.
It's going to shock you. My wires are all crossed. I didn't have time to fix them because I just got off a red eye and a power nap. And so I'm all fucked up like a soup sandwich, but we're making it happen for these guys. Look at these guys showing chest, long hair. Let's party. Man,
look at these guys for sure. I'm going to give a good intro. This band has toured with the likes of Slayer, Anthrax, LA Guns, Motorhead. They played Wacken, Malmo, Rocklahoma, the Monsters of Rock Cruise, the Motorhead Cruise. Third album, Good for Nothing, which is also the title track that just came out not that long ago, is out now. Matt Pinfield is in the fucking video as well. And these guys may not remember this, but I met them because I was the host of both Motorhead Motorboats. And that was a long time ago, but we did meet back on those two motorboats, at least the first one. I don't know if you played both, but you might have played both. Band is Butterside. It's Patrick Allen Stone and guitarist Sam Colton. What's going on, dudes? How are you?
I don't know, man. Your guy just said soup sandwich, so I'm focused on that.
Soup sandwich, it's fucked up. You can't put soup on a sandwich. It doesn't work. It doesn't. Wait, it's old hillbilly shit from Vegas.
You can mix the soup in a sandwich. Grilled cheese and tomato soup is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Bread into the soup, and then you can do it.
Nice.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, that is soup and sandwich, or you're dipping your soup in the sandwich. This would be taking noodle soup and putting it on bread.
Let me say this. What about when it's a bread bowl? When it's a bread bowl.
That is a bread bowl that is separate. That is not a sandwich. You're not picking it up with your hands. I would love to go. I would go to San Francisco right now and get a bread bowl and bite into it, but it's not going to work that way. It aesthetically doesn't work.
I don't know.
One point.
I think we're onto something. Man. I think that'd be a great restaurant. Soup sandwich.
Soup sandwich, yeah.
I mean, let's put our money together, boys. It's still early in the year.
We are looking for a title for the actual record, so that might actually...
I hope you don't call it soup sandwich, because it's bad enough that you call Butterside, for God's sakes. Let's not...
No, don't listen to him. You should go... Butterside presents soup sandwich. Done. Yeah. Don't listen to this old crank.
So, by the way, I got a lot to get into with you guys, but let's start with the name. I know that basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was made just to make people question the name. I know you, Patrick, had that name like since you started writing songs for the first album. It was like a placeholder, and you just kept it. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it was like Limp Bizkit was huge, Korn was huge. We were like searching for a name and like, you know, Piss of the Devil or like, you know, Fire from the Gods just wasn't, you know, getting me excited. Right. And it was just like, it was a flub on a recording. And it was, the guy said, what did you just say? Like, I was trying to rhyme with genocide. And it said Butterside. And they're like, what's Butterside? I said, that's the fucking name of the band. It's just like, let's get through it. Let's get over it. Let's move past it.
Oh, so it was supposed to be Butterside. You fucked up the lyric and you switched it to Butterside and said, all right, I'm going to double down on this. And that's what we're called.
Well, the funniest thing is that, like, you know, you think you're going to come up with a more clever name and then the names right. you come up with are just ridiculous. And then of course, that moment with Lemmy when it was like, yeah, I'm thinking about changing the name. And he says, oh, I like Butterside. And you're like, well, I guess we're stuck.
Yeah, and then you leaned into it. You leaned into it, those shirts that said, what the fuck does Butterside mean a few years ago? So that's cool, too.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to go back. I don't mean to be starting on a somewhat of a sour note, but it's kind of a great story, your origin story to now, Patrick. I don't know, you know, I think it's worth getting into because it is fascinating. And feel free to correct me where I fuck up. But you moved, your father was extremely wealthy at one point, right?
You've
lost everything, right?
He's amazing.
And, you are, we'll go into more detail with this, but you went down the road of drugs. You started doing every drug known to man. You're living, you got kicked out of the house, right? You, if I'm not mistaken, you fought a cop at one point. You went to jail, like really just crazy. You joined a fucking biker gang. Like it almost seems like a joke. Like this is not true, right? And then even you're doing, I guess the kids call it smack. Is that right? I don't even know if I'm using the right term.
Whatever and you call it, I'm doing it, yeah.
Somehow you're a probation it's officer all... found you at the gang's house. Is that right?
Yeah.
Fucking crazy. And then just because, I mean, I'm not saying this to fucking gloss over this, but part of the catalyst, I believe you lost your sister to suicide, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of put a wedge in the family a little bit, and that's when everything kind of went awry, right?
Then you
get the needles. You meet a movie star doing heroin, right? You've never said who that movie star is, though, right?
No,
I wouldn't ask you to. And then you start dating some chick who knew Lemmy.
Yeah,
and that's all during this drug fueled.
Yeah.
You started at an early age too, right? You were a kid when you started.
Yeah, man. I wanted to be Jim Morrison. You know what I mean? So I came here and I went down that rabbit hole as far as I could. I dug as fast and as hard as I could. And, you know, with all the research I've done on Jim Morrison, I'm pretty sure I went a lot farther than he did, but I somehow managed to be lucky enough to survive all of it. But yeah, along the way, you know, me and this, my Bonnie to my Clyde was, you know, great friends with the Motorhead crew. So I met them and became friends with them and we partied a lot. And, it was a chaotic, crazy time.
How many years was it from like, and I don't mean to like dig up the past, but even a lot of your songs are very open about this stuff too. So from like day one of, hey, let me try that to the day that you got the call about your father having a heart attack that helped catalyst you to sobering up. How many years are we talking about?
I mean, gosh, if you want to put a stamp on like when I started drinking, probably 12, you know, 12 Jesus years old, Christ. I started drinking and smoking pot. But then, I mean, I moved to LA when I was 17, 18. And by the time I was 19, I was slamming and I was doing crack and everything else up to about that point. And then, you know, it was a good 12, 13 years before I finally realized I'm going to be nothing. Let's change that.
And what's also cool, though, is that even in the high point of your father's career, I heard like he used to fly planes. Like we're talking multi-million dollars, lost everything. But even at that point, you said, I don't want to be this. I want to be a rock star. Like you always wanted, singing was always in your soul.
Yeah. Yeah. I had my own floor in our house growing up. And we set up the band there. You know, I had a band in high school. We were covering Ozzy and Metallica and Guns N' Roses and all that shit. And everybody from school was over for a party every day. I had a keg going on like every night. My parents were two floors up. They could give a shit less whether I was down there, you know, building nuclear bombs or making sandwiches. They didn't care. Soup sandwiches. But
at least you're using your time correctly, trying to invent the soup sandwich, trying to prove people wrong.
Yes, yes. But yeah, when, you know, my sister's suicide definitely led him to just, you know, I saw this massive mountain of a man kind of crumble. And then before I knew it, you know, we were practically out on, I mean, we weren't out on the streets, but, you know, my parents separated and went off in different directions. And my brother and I were kind of forced to make it all work. And my brain at the time thought, well, I want to do drugs. Let's just get a bunch of drugs. We'll sell drugs. And then I got caught with the drugs and got kicked out of the state of California.
Right. And then you also, you did punch a cop, right? That's fucking wild.
Well, I was on about like 3 hits of acid, you know. Oh. And, you know, when you're in that dimension and a guy comes up to you and he's got this authority figure, I just saw him. It was like a cartoon. It was just like, you know, you think you're better than me. And and then, bam, I was on the floor. His partner was right behind me. I thought I was in Candyland. You know, I was about to climb the stairway to heaven. And then there was this guy telling me that, like, reality, you know, I was like, fuck your reality. And then he won.
Yeah. But by the way,
I fought the law and the law won.
Did your punch connect? Like, did you do any damage or not really? Like, you're too high.
I think so. I mean, enough so that his partner, you know, he was, I think I surprised him. I don't think he was ready for it. It really came out of nowhere. And I'm not a guy that punches people, you know, I've been known to punch a few guys, but yeah, it was just like, what? Doge.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. At least you have that story in your bank. You know, it's like, it's a good story to have. Even I know you've been sober. I think it's 18 years now, but that's a fucking great story to have. So then just to bring people to the next phases, which is just, you know, you're one of those guys that the more I looked into you, at least a half a dozen times, I'm like, well, that's fucking cool. Like things like that. So, you know, you get a phone call from a guy who's trying to return Tupperware to your dad. Right.
Yeah.
And he comes in and sees your father having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And that snaps you. You're high at the time.
Yeah.
But it snaps you back to reality to go. You want to go see your dad. God forbid he dies. You have all this unresolved shit. And that's the catalyst to get you sober and back to L.A., right?
Yeah. I should have been dead in that moment. Like I had registered enough dope to kill an elephant. And I think I was.
And that was your plan. Your plan was to kill yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so that, you know, that fast forward a few hours after that moment, you know, I was up by his side and I just kind of, it all dawned on me, you know, I had this epiphany of like, you know, man, you've done nothing with your life except for, you know, a lot of, you know, self-indulgence and like, you know, what the hell are you doing? And like, I've destroyed every relationship in my life, including my family. And it was just like, can you save my father, please? And I will return the favor by doing everything that, you know, that little voice has always told you, you can do it. And that's the one I ignored forever. And that's the only one that I listen to now is the one that says, let's go.
What's wild is that I also do a health and wellness podcast on another show, which is so funny, the differences of these two shows. But very often the story for most people is, unfortunately in humanity, we need to hit rock bottom before we can find our way out. I wish that wasn't true, but more times than not, it is true. So then you move back, you start living with some chick who's an actress, right? And that gets you to, which is funny, when you were on your highest of like doing the most amount of drugs, you would do this game on Deadwood where if they said motherfucker or cocksucker, you would take a shot or something like that.
Wow.
And then you end up getting on Deadwood as a fucking actor, as an extra, and it starts making you money where now you're in the acting game for a bit. You're singing in church. You have money in the bank. Yep. The world starts turning around for you. Fair?
Not just started. It just, everything shifted. As soon as I made that promise, it was like, I got really lucky. I know a lot of people that, you know, I've walked people through the program. I've got tons of friends that are in the program, and I'm just so grateful that mine feels a little bit unique. You know, they call it a touch by God moment. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, boom, and everything just shifted. It was like, oh, okay. I asked for something and it was answered and returned and given to me. And now are you a man of your word or are you not? You know? Mm-hmm. So everything just opened up, everything changed, and it still keeps happening. Like, I'm still learning those lessons today, how to go even farther and, you know, have bigger balls than you've ever had before and take on things that you never think would be possible. You have to, you know, just, you have to be grateful for them as if they've already happened and walk through them.
By the way, with Sam next to you, is it a deal breaker if the guys in the band do drugs or drink, or you don't care what they do, you stay sober? Sam?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's. I don't think it is, but for me personally, I've never actually drank or done a drug. So.
Well, you also look 12, Sam. I don't know how old you are, but you look like you're 12 years old.
That's hilarious. What if he's tried and they just don't sell him alcohol because he's for his whole life he looks rich and everyone just thinks it's a fake ID? What a great way to never get hooked on something.
Yeah, exactly.
He's unique. He is the most unique person I know. And this is proof. This is a little bit of proof. Just one little thing. The first time we toured, we got to Jacksonville, Florida, and we go to this like a festival or a fair. And I'm like, come on, let's get some tacos. And we're staying in line, and Sam's like nervous. And I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, I've never had a taco before.
What? Oh my God. Sam, is it true that you're...
He's just...
It was a number of years ago. But yeah, a lot has changed since then.
He had me fooled for a long time that he was like the most innocent person around. And then, you know, you find out a few of the stories.
Are you also waiting? I think I heard this, that you're waiting to get your first pubes before you start drinking. Is that true?
That's something like that. Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'm
waiting for a soup sandwich.
We said it was for a knock at the door.
All right, before we go any further, you know these guys, because they've been a sponsor of the show nearing 4 years. We're talking about Yo Kratom, YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo of Kratom. High-quality Kratom delivered direct to you, quick, fast, fresh, no longer worrying about how long that Kratom's been sitting on the bodega or gas station shelf, and you can find a custom strain or unique blend that is only available at YoKratom.com. Plus, that neat way of buying it at a kilo for just $60. Go to YoKratom.com and stock up on those $60 kilos. Let's get back into it.
Here's my question. Why didn't you have a taco? This is crazy. Did your parents warn you about underage sex? Alcohol, drugs, and tacos? Was that the Mount Rushmore of sin?
I don't know. And there was no particular reason other than just me being a picky kid, I guess. And I never had one. And I grew up in Missouri, so it's, you know.
Fair enough. You got the lead with that. I got you, baby.
I should have led with that, yeah.
Patrick, I got you. Also, as you said, you were singing in college, singing in high school. You were always singing. And at one point, I don't know what year this was, but you were actually offered the gig to replace Kevin in Quiet Riot, right?
Oh, yeah.
What year was that?
Came over to my, he was at my he was at a gig with Ace, my band Aces and Eights, and we were playing the Key Club, and a friend of mine had gotten to their manager, and their manager reached out, and he told me Frankie and, you know, some of the guys are coming to the show, yeah, I'm singing on stage, and I remember us carrying this note, and Frankie Benali's standing there, and he's reaching up with his hand, and he gives me he's like, you're the guy. And I was like, holy shit. So we talked after, and then he came over to my apartment, and he talked about the whole, bringing the thing back to life. But the funny thing was, is I hadn't ever taken a professional voice lesson ever in my entire life. Wow. And, again, Jim Morrison being my hero, it was just all about like being the Lizard King. You know what I mean? It wasn't about technique. And even though I was influenced and probably my favorite singer, one of my favorite singers was, you know, Axl Rose or Chris Cornell or something like that. It was something that I never expected to have to do. I was going to be my own original guy, do my own original music. I can sing how I want. So, maybe I just didn't have to put in the work, then this opportunity, I was like, well, shit, like I'm going to make tons of money and I'm going to be out with it. I remember hearing Quiet Riot for the first time and my brother woke me up. It was blaring on the stereo when I was a kid. And it was like, what the fuck is that? You know, it was so just crazy. So, yeah, of course, it was an opportunity I wanted to take on. But about a month into it, man, I couldn't keep up. I was trying to yell instead of sing. So I started taking professional voice lessons from a guy named Ron Anderson, who completely changed my life. I lost the Quiet Riot gig, but, landed the Steven Adler gig, a few months later. Which is
also wild, too, that you sang with Adler's Appetite. I was actually pretty close with Kevin and Frank of Quiet Riot. I knew them for a bunch of years. Good dudes, just good fucking dudes. And I hate to say this story, but going back when Kevin died. He died pretty young, like 50 something, you know? And it was during the early internet age where there was always rumors of an 80s rock star dying. Like, you didn't know, there's like people would just share, like, not that long ago, they said Lita Ford was dead and she wasn't. They just do that all the time. So I called him, like, Frankie, please answer. I want to know that you're okay. And it turned out that he, sorry, not Frankie, Kevin. And it turned out that he was dead. So I left that message on his deceased voicemail, which is pretty crazy. But so then he starts singing with Adler's Appetite for a bit. This is all before working for Motorhead as a roadie, or is that after working for Motorhead as a roadie?
After the roadie thing was happening in the chaos of my addictions. And,
oh wow! Oh yeah, that's cool. I heard that, right.
But Lem and I was fortunate enough to become super close. So it's funny, the whole Deadwood thing, Lemmy thing. So when I showed up on the set of Deadwood, the guys from ZZ Top were there. Alice in Chains were there. Anthrax was there. You know, there was tons. There was this huge rock and roll presence on set. And the final scene was the whole town had to go to war with the Pinkertons, you know, the Hearst's whole CIA, that whole brigade. So the whole town was getting together and they needed all types of crazy looking people. So they brought in all these rock stars and I brought in Lemmy. Lemmy was on set.
That's
with
fucking
us,
great.
But we were still tight, you know, and we got even tighter after I'd gotten sober. And, you know, he was, you know, I could tell that he was like, you know, Lemmy's the kind of guy that you just would never tell him like how to act as far as drugs go, because he was always super intelligent and articulate when he got, you know, I would watch the guy eat a buck knife full of speed, you know what I mean? And then he would go on to tell you, you know, he'd recite poetry from Edgar Allan Poe, you know, he was just so brilliant and all the time and well, you know, well composed and friendly and kind. And I wasn't that, you know, I was the guy who had my dick in my hand bouncing off the bathroom walls, you know, coming out and embarrassing everybody and not being able to speak English when I sat next to you. So he was super excited to see me get sober. And we actually had a stronger bond after. So he kept telling me, you know, he was watching me, you know, the whole thing. He was right there to see the whole thing with Quiet Riot and Adler and everything else. And he was always like, why aren't you doing your own band? You know, when you're ready to do your thing, give me a call. And, you know, so about 2 years into the Adler thing, I finally said, hey, fuck this, let's go. And he was like, let's do it.
By the way, wasn't there a time where you fucked up on stage at a Motorhead show and he made you come out and they threw shit at you? Didn't that happen once?
Yeah, that might have been the beginning of the end. As far as work goes with them, yes. Yeah, man, that's a long story. I like to compress it, but PRS guitars have this locking the back, you know, the
locking tuner.
Yeah, the locking tuner, right? And this thing was new, and I wasn't the guy doing research on. I wasn't the guitar geek. I was like, I was sitting there with Phil Campbell and we were doing tons of dope at my house, and the phone call comes in that his roadie can't make the tour, and he hangs up and goes, ah, damn, I don't have a roadie. I said, yeah, you do. And he was like, all right, let's go. So we like went to Guitar Center, filled a box full of shit. You know what I mean? And I'm very familiar with guitars, but this thing was new to me, this locking tuning peg. So like, I didn't even think to look on the back of the guitar where you string the thing through and tighten it up. And then all you have to do is barely turn the tuning peg to get it into tune. So instead I'm trying to wind this fucking thing on a peg that's this long. And we just got in like three of these guitars. So like, I'm trying to tune it. The string keeps popping off the guitar. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, am I retarded? And I'm so self-absorbed and high. I'm like, I wouldn't ask anyone for help. So it was just like all the other guitars were tuned. And then it came time to use this guitar, and I went to hand him this guitar, and he grabs the guitar and he walks out on stage, and they are so loud. And this was probably an audience of 10,000 people, and he strums the guitar and all the strings fly off, and the PA just makes this fucking, the whole entire venue, like the most, like it was like an earthquake or something, like a nuclear bomb went off or whatever. And everybody in the entire place is holding their ears until they finally shut down the whole thing. And then they get Lemmy's mic running back up and he says, I'd like to introduce you to a fucking guitar tech, Mr. Patrick Stone. And I've never been covered in more Coca-Cola
That's
syrup
fucking
or beer.
Great. At least he was able to kind of ride through it. Not, you know, that's pretty great. So you almost sang with Quiet Riot. You sang with Adler's Appetite. Lemmy also gets you an audition for Velvet Revolver.
Yeah.
How far did that get?
he called and said I was the guy, and Matt Sorum gave me a call, and I was walking into work was working at a titty bar at the time. And he explained that, like Lem said, I'm the guy. Let's get you in the studio and record. So after completely losing my mind and freaking out, you know, you guys, what's happening in this club? Nobody knew what I was talking about. Everybody down there was like Spanish, and like nobody really knew what I was talking about. But
what
I was,
were you sorry. Doing at the strip club, by the way? Were you a DJ?
At that point, I was bartending.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So I went into the studio and I recorded a bunch of songs and sent them in. And Matt said that the guys liked them enough to send me back in to do some more. And then by the time I got the other batch in, I think they were already kind of talking to Corey Taylor, or Slash had started working on his solo record, and Miles Kennedy was in the picture. So the whole thing kind of dissolved at that point.
Oh, so it wasn't like you did anything wrong. It just kind of fell apart.
Well, I don't think maybe I just didn't impress them enough, or it was just, you know, it wasn't my time. But I know they liked the recordings, and Matt and I are still friends, and Slash and I are still friends. Slash actually came out to just around that time to check me out, I think, because some of my friends were tight with him, and they talked him into coming down to the Viper Room, and he jumped up on stage and we did a bunch of Aerosmith.
That's
and
got fucking great. That's so yeah. cool. And yeah. also, you know, I was fortunate. I met, you know, Lemmy did my old radio show once, came in studio, and then I was asked to host the Motorhead Cruise, which I did those two times that it happened. And I have the one memory I have that nobody else can have is that when they had their 40th anniversary, I got to give them the plaque on the boat. I handed it to Lemmy. So no one else can have that memory. I'm the only one that did that, which is great. It was such an honor to be able to be a part of that. One thing I heard that was really cool, everyone knows the story of Lemmy's corner in the Rainbow. And you said somewhere that he would kind of bring that corner on tour.
Well, yeah. I mean,
like he'd bring slot machines and stuff, right?
Yeah, he'd have a video game or a slot. There's a pinball machine that would go with us. He loved to be, you know, he always just wanted to keep his mind occupied. If he didn't have anything like that, he'd be reading a book or, you know.
And he was very supportive, telling you to write music and to write lyrics. And he would work with you and listen to things that your ideas that you had. That's fucking cool as shit.
Yeah, he would pull me in the back of the bus, and he was writing the Black Magic record, and he would actually let me kind of change a few things and write a few things here and there. And I was just like, what is happening?
That's fucking crazy. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then at some point, I might be fucking up these details a little bit. I know that you worked with Phil Campbell on demo since day one. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the line, you also worked with Lemmy's son.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's all very incestuous. But you decide to do Butterside, and the first inception is with Jimmy Bain of Dio and Simon Wright from AC/DC.
Right. That was actually before really letting
you had like a spec deal at Interscope or something. Like it wasn't like Butterside yet, but that was like when you're first doing your first solo thing. How did you get those two people? Like how the fuck did that happen?
Well, again, it all comes back to drugs, which is the perfect excuse to be on your show. Jimmy would frequent my house, you know, and then I, you know, we would smoke a fucking shit ton of PCP, and then I'd hand him a bass, and he'd just start playing. Like, I mean, he was the king of four notes, you know. He would just and I'd just be tweaking the sound until we got a really cool tone, you know. And I'd always have these new pedals because everybody was coming over to pawn their gear for dope, you know. And so I always had something new for us to play with, and we would sit in my little studio and just play for days. Literally, like days would go by that we wouldn't eat or drink anything, and we would just sit there high as fuck playing. And so Jimmy was just like, you know, he's like, we got to record this stuff for real. And I had a friend at Interscope, and he was like, let's bring you in and we'll record it. You know, we would actually park our asses on the couch outside. Axel was still in there recording the Chinese Democracy, and we were just waiting for him to leave so we could go in and record. And Jimmy suggested Simon Wright, and I was just like, wow, I've got the drummer from AC/DC and the bass player from Dio. How can I lose? But somehow I still lost because I was so fucked up. You know, I just lost track of
how to get it worked. James, you look bewildered, James.
Look, I don't fact check these episodes. I don't write them. Is this the first time someone has told us about doing angel dust? This has to be.
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
dust,
pretty cool.
Motherfucking dust, right? PCP's angel dust.
And by the way, let that be a lesson to you, kids. Patrick Allen Stone says you want to party with, you want to meet rock stars, just start doing drugs.
No.
Yeah. How come dust hasn't come back?
Yeah, yeah. I just like the more records. That's close to
angel dust. Great record.
Rodney King gave it a bad name, bro.
Oh my God, is that what it took? Rodney King. Rodney King single-handedly destroyed the angel dust industry. Where's that goddamn miniseries on Netflix?
And also from what I heard was that the one takeaway from working with Steven Adler is that Steven thinks your mom had a great ass.
You know, he had a way with words with all of the ladies.
On fairness, he was on angel dust. But what are you going to do? You can't keep it in when you're dusted, right?
And by the way, you mentioned the strip clubs. I know that the early tours were sponsored by like Hustler and Deja Vu. Like, is that how you got that to happen? Was because you were a bartender there?
Yeah, that's my family. They stepped up a few tours and wrapped the buses, you know. Yeah.
So
every town, this is really rough. You know, we had to pull into every town, and then we had to deal with like 10 new strippers at every city because they had to come on and do their promotions. So like we literally had like a built-in corral of like, you know, women that were ready to take their clothes off to promote their club in that city. So
sounds terrible. It really sounds terrible.
Horrible. Yeah. Horrible.
So now Butterside's first record comes out. I think it's 2016. I could be wrong on the year. I apologize. Is that about right? The self-titled?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
You know. And then the second record comes out, Spiritual Violence, a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now the new record, the title track is Good for Nothing. Am I correct there as well?
It's a bit of a mix-up. So Good for Nothing. So what I was doing is we're following the model of today's kind of you know, business model. And that is you want to keep smashing everybody, you know, the attention span of everyone is very short. So you put out a single every 6 to 8 weeks. So that's the campaign that we started. And now this was the seventh song in that run.
Yeah.
And so, unbeknownst to us, the distribution company that we work with, they categorize things by how many songs are on a compilation, and then they'll call it an EP or a single or an album. So they put the name album on this thing, and it's not the album yet.
It's not the album.
Oh, so because there is only eight tracks or nine tracks. So I figured it did seem light for a full record.
Yeah, no, there's actually seven on what they're calling the album, but we have a 12 song record coming out in which we will call the album, and we're still yet to decide on that.
I mean, Soup Sandwich. I thought we already established that.
Yes,
yeah, high contender right now.
Soup Sandwich.
Throw it in there. Just give a little nod to your boy, baby. Give a little nod to your boy.
Angel Dust, a little Soup Sandwich.
Yeah.
By the way,
that
should be the whole title for sure. That should be the whole title.
Butterside, and we're going to tour with Jelly Roll.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, that's terrific.
That'd be great, actually.
He was sitting in Lemmy's spot the other night. I saw Jelly Roll. I have just mass respect for that guy.
Yeah, he did the show a couple years ago, and there's a comedy festival that this we put on, and he played it a couple years ago as well. Just a good dude, just a solid dude.
Yeah. I saw him the other night at a green room. Yeah.
And one of the comics that comes in and sits on the show a lot is opening for him on tour as well. Josh Adam Myers.
Hey guys, this is Shannon again. We are going to end the episode right here. If you want to listen to the second half of the episode, you can go right on over to gasdigital.com, use promo code SDR14, and you will get a 2-week free trial. And with that free trial, you can get the full unedited versions of every SDR show, including this one, as well as every other show on the Gas Digital Network. You get shows sooner. You can take part in the live chat. And there's bonus content, plenty of bonus content for the SDR show, as well as all the other shows that is exclusive content only for Gas Digital members. So if you have been wanting to subscribe for a while and been putting it off, now's the time to do it because it's our special spring promotion where you get a 14-day free trial when you use promo code SDR14. So do that right now, and we will see you guys next week.